Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, July the 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, could an email exchange be the key to solving the investigation into Trump campaign links to Russia?
That is an attempt at collusion in itself.
Republicans put off an August break as they continue to work on a health care bill. An American Army soldier is accused of looking to join the Islamic State. Also had a legal challenge to President Trump's habit of blocking people on Twitter. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump is praising his son Don Jr. for disclosing emails that show how the Trump campaign met with a Russian lawyer in an active search for incriminating information about Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton last year. White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders read a brief statement by the president to reporters on Tuesday.
I have a quick statement that I'll read from the president. My son is a high-quality person, and I applaud his transparency. And beyond that, I'm going to have to refer everything on this matter to Don Jr.'s counsel and outside counsel, and won't have anything else to add beyond that today.
VOA Capitol Hill correspondent said the disclosure that Donald Trump Jr. eagerly sought damaging information about Clinton ahead of the November election sent shockwaves through Congress and brought strong reaction, especially among Democrats like House Intelligence Committee Chair Congressman Adam Schiff, who's leading an investigation into the same issue.
But here I think you have quite direct evidence that the Russian government had damaging information, communicated that to the campaign, and all of the campaign denials of whether we know this is going on or whether the Russians had any involvement, whether the Russians wanted to help his campaign, obviously now have to be viewed in a completely different context.
But Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell declined to comment on it.
What I have a lot of confidence in is the Intelligence Committee handling this whole investigation. Senator Burr and Senator Warner have ball control, and we'll hear from them later.
Trump has dismissed the Russia probe as a witch hunt pushed by Democrats and insisted for months there was no collusion between him or his campaign and the Russian government. Joining me now for some analysis is former CIA investigator and criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Jack, what stands out to you the most from these latest revelations?
What stands out most is that the Trump administration from the beginning has said there is not one iota of proof of collusion. What we see in these emails is that there is, very specifically, Donald Trump Jr. believes that this is the Russians. This is the Russian government, and they have bad stuff. And his response is, I want it, or it would be really great if you could release it sometime late in the summer. Guess what? That is an attempt at collusion in itself.
Is collusion a crime?
It's a great question. The question, first of all, is it a crime for him, depending upon what his position is, or is it a crime for Jared Kushner, who actually goes to the meeting along with him, or Paul Manafort, the boss of the campaign? And so there may be, if there is collusion between the Russians and the Americans, but think of it this way, and this is sort of the gut question, is if you're being approached by the Russian government with information that appears to be illegally obtained, why don't you go to the FBI? That's number one. Number two, subsequent to this, if you deny any contact, any information whatsoever to anybody on the Bureau side as this investigation is spinning out, if that was ever denied and it now exists, that is obstruction, and that is a federal crime. So the question is, is it a crime to collude with the Russians? If you're in a political place where you're saying, well, what he did wasn't a crime, it was just a really bad idea, you know you're on a slippery slope. Because in the end, if what we're really talking about here is whether the Trump administration and ultimately Donald Trump Sr., the father, the president, is involved, is not a legal question but a political one. Because it's the Republicans themselves who have to decide whether or not he rises to the level of impeachment, and that's political.
Is there any reason to believe that Don Jr. did not tell his father about these meetings or these emails.
I find it incredulous to believe that Donald Trump Sr. would not have known about this. I'm imagining one of the very first phone calls that is made afterward is to, "Hey, Dad, guess what I think I may have." The fact that his senior political advisor and the campaign chief both know about these, it's shocking to assume that the president wouldn't know. I frankly think unreasonable that he wouldn't know.
The fact that this meeting with a foreign adversary at the heat of a campaign when we knew that there was already an issue with meddling into our election, and that this particular foreign adversary was under U.S. sanctions, does that add to the legal problems?
Of course it does. There are a lot of reasons why that may be the case, because there were actually sanctions in place at this point about what the Russians could do. The fact that Donald Trump Jr. was actually having contact and may have been talking with them about those issues may in itself be a violation of the rules themselves, of the law itself, when it comes to what you can and can't do. So that's actually broader than the question of a criminal conspiracy that we're talking about right now.
Do you believe there are other emails that investigators maybe have not yet uncovered? And could any of them be with President Trump himself?
At this point, I think all bets are off. One of the things that we do know, however, because this happened under President Clinton, is that once you have a special counsel that is looking into an investigation, they have wide-ranging authority and jurisdiction. They can chase this down wherever it might go.
We've been hearing more now that this could be heading toward people within the campaign, including potentially the president's son-in-law, being in jeopardy of actually doing jail time. Why not the president himself? Is he completely immune to getting in that kind of trouble?
No, he is not. As the president, you have immunity in some ways from prosecution while you are the president. However, much of what we're talking about was prior to him even receiving the nomination. So there are real questions of what could happen to him. We are getting as close to the inner circle as possible without actually touching the president at this point, and we're nowhere near done. It appears to me, looking at how the Trump administration has handled all of this, they never approached this with something called OPSEC or operational security, which means I think there's a lot of information that's out there in terms of emails and other communications that is discoverable. And if it's discoverable, just like the New York Times found this piece, it seems to me that there could be a lot more out there. And there may be a few more people in Washington sweating right now, potentially even including the president.
That's former CIA officer Jack Rice. Thanks so much for your perspective. Well, the president's Russia problems have not helped Republicans controlling the Senate as they continue to struggle with efforts to repeal President Obama's health care law. Senate leader Mitch McConnell said Tuesday he'll unveil a revised version of major health care legislation on Thursday and planned for a vote next week. He also canceled the first 2 weeks of the usual August recess to give lawmakers more time. But Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the problem isn't time, it's the substance of the bill.
They can spend 2 more weeks, 2 more months, 2 years. As long as this bill continues to cut taxes on the very wealthy and hurt working Americans, the bill's going to be as unpopular as it is today. They've had 6 months on this bill since January 4th. They haven't been able to make any progress. 2 weeks isn't going to solve their problem. The way they can solve their problem is very simple. Get rid of all the tax cuts to the rich, get rid of the cuts to Medicaid, and work with us to improve the existing system.
Republican Senator Mike Lee, also one of many in his own party of Republicans who are not happy with the current bill, as divisions within the party continue to leave the prospects unclear.
My preference for full repeal of Obamacare, it is what we campaigned on as Republicans. Basically, every Republican who campaigned for federal office for 7 years has promised that. I think that's what we ought to do. The last iteration of the Senate bill is one that I cannot support. I've pointed out to my colleagues there are some changes that could be made to it that could bring me along.
This is enormous political pressure. There is enormous political pressure on a GOP majority that so far failed to make good on any of its major legislative commitments, despite full control of Congress and the White House. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. A U.S. court halts the deportation of 1,500 Iraqis. A House panel unveils a $1.6 billion plan for building the U.S.-Mexico wall. The western U.S. is awash in fire and record heat. A bank worth $7 trillion pledges to calculate the costs of climate risks. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The FBI says an active duty U.S. Army sergeant has been arrested for allegedly trying to help Islamic State has a long history of making threats and pro-extremist statements. Here's FBI Special Agent Paul Delacorte.
I'm here to report to you that on Saturday, July 8th, the FBI Honolulu SWAT team arrested Ikaika Kang for material support to terrorism. Kang is 34 years old. He's from Hawaii. Sergeant First Class in the U.S. Army, assigned to the 25th Infantry at Schofield Barracks. He was trained as an air traffic controller and trained in combatives.
Kang made his first court appearance in Honolulu and was ordered to remain behind bars. Undercover FBI agents posing as Islamic State contacts arrested Kang on Saturday after he allegedly pledged his loyalty to IS and talked about wanting to kill a bunch of people. In Kuwait City, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson scored a first tentative victory for diplomacy in his push to help find a resolution to the month-long blockade of Qatar by its Persian Gulf neighbors. Standing beside Qatari Foreign Minister Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, Tillerson announced the United States and Qatar have signed a memorandum of understanding.
The agreement in which we both have signed on behalf of our governments represents weeks of intensive discussions between experts and reinvigorates the spirit of the Riyadh summit. The memorandum lays out a series of steps the two countries will take over the coming months and years to interrupt and disable terror financing flows and intensify counterterrorism activities globally.
State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert elaborates on that.
I think to highlight that the United States and Qatar have this agreement on terror financing, it sends a really good message to all of the nations that, hey, look, we can get to this agreement on this. We can get to an agreement that terror financing is a major issue and a major concern.
Qatar had said it is willing to negotiate but will not give up its sovereignty. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
VOA's International Edition continues now with a look of what's trending on social media. For that, we're joined by Andrew Palchevsky. Hey, Andrew, what's happening?
Let's talk about social media and politics, because
okay.
Those are two things that often often go hand in hand.
Yes, they do, for sure.
And President Trump, as we've talked about many times before, is a very prolific Twitter user. And part of what he does when he uses Twitter sometimes is that he blocks people that he does not agree with and doesn't like to hear from. Now, some people have argued that blocking those users on Twitter is a violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. Because they say, as a public figure, President Trump cannot deny people the right to express themselves just because they have opinions he doesn't like, and because his tweets are considered part of a public forum, which cannot be censored by a government official.
Okay.
So people have talked about this for a while now, but now there's some action. A group led by the Knight First Amendment Institute at New York's Columbia University has filed a lawsuit against President Trump, Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and Director of Social Media Dan Scavino. They filed this lawsuit on behalf of seven people who have been blocked by President Trump. They say that they have had their First Amendment rights violated because their opinions cannot be expressed in this public forum and because a government employee or a government figure has blocked them from expressing themselves. So no word yet on where this lawsuit might go, what might come of this, and also notably no word yet from Twitter about this lawsuit and what they might do and how they might stand on this. But a big step forward. We'll have to see if
it
develops.
Should be interesting to see how this turns out.
Absolutely. We're going to have to see if it develops, if it goes anywhere, if maybe President Trump just stops blocking people to get around it.
No doubt. Okay. So anything else going on?
Yeah. Well, we've talked about another issue before with social media and politics, the so-called social media bubble, that people self-isolate and only look at news or information on social media that they agree with, and that many people have said leads to a lot of partisanship on social media. Well, the Nieman Lab has done a research report, and they found that people on social media do tend to focus on news that fits their political views, but the people who use social media actually consumed more news sources than people who didn't use social media. They got more of a variety of news sources than people who didn't.
Wow, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. You would think that, you know, again,
you'd think it would be the opposite.
Easy to self-isolate. Yeah. You only look at certain accounts, only follow certain people that agree with you. But in that great mixing bowl of social media, tweets pop up and different hashtags pop up, so people get to experience different things. And notably, this isn't just happening in the United States. They found it happens in the United Kingdom and Germany as well. So maybe a bit of a global impact there, that people are getting different news sources, different information through social media.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Andrew. And you can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE.
This is Science in a Minute.
Coffee is one of the most popular beverages in the world. It is estimated that over 2.25 billion cups of coffee are consumed throughout the world every day. There has been an active debate regarding daily coffee consumption amounts for some time. Two new and separate studies drawing data from different sources suggest that drinking coffee may actually help reduce the risk of death from a variety of causes such as heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, respiratory, and kidney disease. The two studies agree that the association with drinking coffee and living longer was even greater for those who drank between 2 to 3 cups a day. However, 4 cups or more could be a problem, according to a 2013 study from the University of South Carolina. That study suggested that people under the age of 55 who drink 4 or more cups of coffee during the day are at greater risk for an early mortality. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
All right, turning now to what's happening in Hollywood, we are joined by Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. Hi, Nicole. So actors Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck, they always seemed like such a happy couple. And then one day they were just no longer together. Sounds like you've got some news about that relationship.
Yeah, so Ben Affleck went public with his new girlfriend, Lindsay Shookus. She is a producer for Saturday Night Live. Just last week, they went public with their romance. And as soon as they came out and said, we're together, and we're spotted, they were spotted together all over L.A. and New York and everything like that, rumors started swirling about when they actually started dating. Sources close to Jennifer Garner, who's Ben's ex, are saying that he actually started dating Lindsay and engaged in an affair with her back in 2015. They said that when Jennifer was on a work trip back 2 years ago, Jennifer Garner approached Lindsay and she said, here, I have text messages that prove that you are in a relationship with my husband. And sources close to Jen say that Lindsay did not want to end the relationship. Of course, on the other side, Ben and Lindsay sources are saying that they absolutely did everything they were supposed to do. They were not romantically involved while both parties were married. Lindsay was married at one point as well. So it's kind of like a he said, she said at this point, but every time Ben and Jen talk about their separation and their divorce, they just say that they are focused on co-parenting their three children together and they don't get into each other's love lives.
Okay. Well, sounds like there's some more romance potential news to talk about. Michael Jackson's daughter growing up and maybe dating?
Yes, Paris Jackson was on the market for a few months. She and her boyfriend, Michael Snoddy, had broken up back in February. So it was pretty exciting for a lot of her fans when she was spotted holding hands with Trevor Donovan. He's an actor from the reboot of Beverly Hills 90210, and he's 39 years old. So immediately, as soon as everybody saw her with an older man, the headlines were that she's got this man, he's older. Well, Paris laughed it off and took to her own Twitter and shared a photo of her holding hands with her best friend, Sophia Richie. She wrote, "Y'all need to chill. Handholding is a very common thing with this photo, but now she has taken that down. So I'm not sure what that means. But one thing I do know is she is very, very focused on her career right now. She just signed a 7-figure deal with IMG Models.
Wow.
And will be starring, exciting. And she will be starring alongside Charlize Theron in the upcoming thriller Gringo. So she's pretty busy and may not have time for a boyfriend.
Well, good for her. She's putting her life together. I know she was really traumatized by the death of her father. And for a long time, I think a lot of people that were close to her were very worried about, you know, what was going to happen with her. So sounds like she's turned things around.
All good things in Paris Jackson world, it sounds like.
All right. Rare.us content editor Nicole Muscella. Well, R&B crooner Gallant is touring with multiple Grammy winner John Legend this year in support of his first album, Ology. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the Washington, D.C. native is gaining worldwide attention as the future of R&B.
Lily Collins plays Ellen, or Ellie, as she prefers to be called. Ellie comes from a Los Angeles family where her father is never home, her stepmother is distant, and her real mother is a lesbian with a bipolar disorder who moves to Arizona to be with her girlfriend. Ellie has an eating disorder, but gets kicked out of her fourth ED rehab. She finally agrees to an unconventional inpatient facility run by Dr. Beckham, played by Keanu Reeves. It's there that Ellie meets Luke, a British dancer whose career was cut short by an injury, and who is the lone male patient in her unit.
Cigarette for dinner. That's not gonna get you points.
Not in the mood.
Okay.
And who in hell made you house dead mother? You walk around here like you've got it all figured out. Well, if you're so fixed and special, why don't you go back to New Jersey or London or wherever the fuck you're from?
I am going back, as soon as my BMI is closer to my age. But right now, I'd rather try and help people than mope about feeling sorry for myself.
You have no idea how I'm feeling.
To the Bone is based in part on director Marty Noxon's own 10-year struggle with eating disorders. Lily Collins, who also struggled with an eating disorder earlier in her life, says that the film was never intended to glamorize anorexia, but to give it an honest treatment.
Nor Marty or I, having gone through the disorder ourselves, nor anyone else in the cast and crew would ever actively pursue making a film that glamorized, fetishized, or encouraged a disease that is so negative. So those were our intentions.
Alex Sharp, who plays Luke, and Collins both told the Associated Press the film deals with a serious subject, but it's not intended to be morose.
It is a dark, it's serious topic. I think serious is a better word than dark, but it's also got a lot of humor to it. So I think we're trying to hone in on that.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually amazing that we're even having a conversation about it.
Totally.
That's the important thing, is that we're sitting here discussing a subject matter that people have steered clear of for a long time.
To the Bone has generated some controversy, with some critics and social media users voicing concerns that the film glamorizes eating disorders. Lily Collins denies that criticism and says that all art pushes some boundaries, including this film.
If you're putting something out into the world for yourself, for a positive reason, for the right intentions, then that's all you can do, and people are going to take from it what they will. And hopefully people take away from this film that, you know, asking for help is never a weakness, and it's a strength, and that you're never alone in your struggles.
Alex Sharp agrees that artists have faced controversy in the past, but that's not an excuse for avoiding controversial subjects like eating disorders.
I mean, even as far back as like Michelangelo and his painting, commissioned work, but slipping in things that weren't in favor of people that were commissioning it and like making a statement that's personal controversy. I think that sort of comes with starting conversations, as you were saying, about the history of starting a new conversation on something that's important always causes waves.
To the Bone also stars Kerry Preston as Ellie's stepmother Susan, Lily Taylor as her biological mother Judy, and Liana Liberato as her half-sister Kelly. The film streams on Netflix beginning July 14th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Gerald Smith. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The UN Secretary General recently released his biannual report on implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 2231. In it, he confirmed that all parties, including Iran, are living up to their commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the nuclear deal agreed to by Iran, the EU, and the P5 plus one countries. But when UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, Jeffrey Feltman, presented the report to the Security Council, he focused on the resolution's other provisions as well, one of which calls on Iran to refrain from activity related to ballistic missile development. He noted that on January 29, 2017, Iran launched a medium-range ballistic missile, and that had followed a series of earlier ballistic missiles launched by Iran in March 2016. The sanctions outlined in Resolution 2231 also restrict Iran's arms transfer and export. UN Undersecretary Feltman reported that after analysis of a cache of weapons seized by the French Navy in the northern Indian Ocean in March 2016, it was determined that the weapons were of Iranian origin and had been shipped from Iran. In addition, Mr. Feltman noted that Iran's Defense Ministry organization again participated in Iraq's defense exhibition. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley said the Secretary General's report is filled with devastating evidence of the nature of the Iranian regime and documents the Iranian government's actions in defiance of Resolution 2231.
Repeated ballistic missile launches, proven arms smuggling, illicit procurement of ballistic missile-related technology.
She also observed that while Resolution 2231 requires states to prohibit the entry into their territory of certain individuals, like Major General Qasem Soleimani, chief of the IRGC's Quds Force, he has openly visited other countries.
We as the Security Council must stand behind the provisions of 2231. We must strictly enforce them and show Iran that we will not tolerate their egregious flaunting of UN resolutions.
The United States will do its part to implement Resolution 2231. It will also work with global partners to interdict prohibited cargo and continue to impose U.S. domestic sanctions on those who help Iran violate Resolution 2231. Iran's behavior and rhetoric are not those of a responsible member of the international community, said Ambassador Haley. The Security Council must recognize this fact and act accordingly.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.